The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And once again, I'm recording this show on the road. We'll be having a variety of guest speakers coming to you from all kinds of different places all over the world over the next week or two. I want to talk about why in the second half of the program. Now, I'm coming to you today from downtown Edmonton, Alberta. So apologies if you do hear sirens in the background coming from the window over there. We've had a few going by this morning. The timing of this show is a little interesting, a little frustrating maybe, but Canada is having an election and the results could be really interesting of that. There are some indications that the increasingly radical left, if authoritarian even, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, he's doing some terrible things with vaccine passports and things like that over here. But maybe he could be trying the same strategy as the Democrats last year, really kind of pushing the COVID panic right around an election. I mean, he deliberately chose the timing of this election. He didn't have to hold an election right now, but he seemed like he wanted to have it in the middle of lockdown. So lots of people would be sending in postal votes. So today is election day. Is he going to try and steal the election the way the Democrats did in the U.S.? Last year. Well, maybe. I think one thing that I think is interesting is that Canada is in the midst of this big freakout over COVID. They've got, all various different provinces. They're all introducing vaccine passports and mask mandates and all of these kind of things. Meanwhile, England just put Canada on its green list just a couple of weeks ago. So, that's why I'm able to be here. The UK said, okay, Canada is safe to travel to. Very little COVID. If you're going to go to Canada, you can go there. You don't have to quarantine when you come back. That's all fine. They're a safe country. And now they're trying to tighten up their rules on, or Britain is, on unvaccinated travelers. Well, that's another story. But still, the UK is saying, nope, Canada's safe. Very little COVID. Greenless country, one of the safest countries in the world. At the same time, Canada itself, absolutely freaking out over COVID. We need to lock everything down. We need to introduce COVID passports. All of these things. Why the difference? Is there a concerted push to kind of get everyone to freak out over COVID, to push up the number of postal votes, making fraud easier? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We have some very talented writers here in Canada. We will keep you up to date with what's going on over here on the elections at thetrumpet.com. I thought about getting a few of our Canadian writers together and talking about it on the show today. But then you get to the timing, kind of the way things work out. I'm recording this on Monday, the day of the election. It's going to play on Tuesday. So you, the listener, you know the results already, or whatever's happened already. Maybe there's been another pause to count mail-ins, etc. Well, I don't. So it's hard to talk too much about it. We do have an article up on the website. Canadians go to the polls. What's next for Canada by Mr. Timothy Osendart. And that gives you a good write-up ahead of the election. As he points out in that article, regardless of what exactly happens on September 20th, what's most important is, God is going to allow it. God is in command. He wrote in that article, that's what he wrote, regardless of what happens, what is most important is God will allow. Scripture tells us God rules in the kingdom of men and sets over nations men and women of his choosing. So he is in command, and we do need to bear that in mind. Top of the show, I forgot to welcome though our listeners from all the different locations. We're here at kpcg.fm, 101.3 on the FM dial, channel 3 on the CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, and of course live on, or not live today, but on video at our website, thetrumpet.com. I thought I'd touch on another related election story this morning, where another related story over here where Russia also, well, not over here, but in the intro here, Russia had elections over the weekend, starting on Friday, finishing on Sunday. I'm sure you have been on the edge of your seats waiting to find out exactly what's going to happen in that election. You know, Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, he's had a lot of unpopularity recently, protests against him. Did he win? Did he lose? Well, no, Putin won. Not really in doubt. That doesn't surprise anybody. Putin cheats, everyone knows. And it wasn't a presidential election, it was parliamentary elections. But his party, United Russia, they won nearly 50% of the vote. They look like they're all set to get a two-thirds majority in the parliament that will allow then Vladimir Putin to do just about anything he wants and change the constitution and the stuff that he's been able to do for years. You know, he when you cheat in the election, you can kind of give yourself whatever your majority you want, I guess. So he's made himself still have enough to control what he wants to do. So yeah, Putin cheats. Everyone knows it. Apple and Google helped him. Apple and Google helped him this time around. One of his chief rivals put together an app that would help you vote for the non-Putin candidate. So you live in a particular area, and you want the big thing that you care about is you want to send a message, you want to vote for the candidate, you want to make it as hard as possible for Vladimir Putin to cheat. You want to vote for the non-Putin candidate that has the best chance of winning. That app would help you do that. So you've got this whole range of different candidates running, and there've been all kinds of election shenanigans, making it harder for people to pick the best non-Putin candidate for a long time. You could log onto the app and see, okay, I'm going to vote for this guy, Bob Smyslovic, and he's going to be the best candidate to beat Putin's candidate. Well, right on Friday, when the election was opening, Apple and Google removed it from their stores. Deutsche Welle wrote, Russia demanded this month that Apple and Google remove the app, saying a refuse to do so would be treated as meddling in its parliamentary executives. On Thursday, Russia said official approaches had been made to the two companies' chief executives. So in the US, these two companies, Apple and Google, they're all about, well, we have a sacred duty to protect electoral integrity. This is essential. This is absolutely critical. If you even imply that the election was stolen, well, you're threatening the sacred electoral integrity and the integrity of our electoral process. And you've got to be taken down. You can't be on our app store. And if you're going to, if you're like a website like Parler that allows people to say the election has been stolen, you can't be in our app store, even if you're not saying it yourself, if you're just allowing people to say that. Because, well, here at Apple and Google, we just worship electoral integrity. And it would just be so damaging to that to allow anyone to say the election was stolen. You go to, but when it comes to Russia, it's, well, yes, sir, Mr. Putin. If you don't want that app on there, well, we'll take it down for you. Yep, we'll do that, no problem. Now, that app's hurting you, we'll get right rid of that for you. Are these the just the good American companies that absolutely protect American values and electoral integrity the way that they say they do? Absolutely not. There's one more aspect to the story I'll touch on just quickly. Riddle Russia had an article, Are These Russia's Last Elections? And it talked about how these will be the last elections conducted with paper, probably, that Russia is shifting to an all-electronic system. And certainly there was e-voting and electronic voting in this election, but they're rolling out more and more. They wrote, the bad news is that these elections, while far from perfect, could end up being Russia's last in paper form. It is obvious that the government aims to implement electronic voting all across the country by the 2024 presidential election. If that happens, monitoring the sanctity of the vote will not even be theoretically possible. So they're still cheating right now. They're not saying that these elections were great and Russia is about to make them much worse. They're still cheating. But as this article points out, well, that's so much easier if it's electronic. So much easier to cheat. And I had to laugh. The mainstream media will point that out in Russia. And they're right. The Russian elections are horribly stolen. But that when it comes to Russia, they have no problem saying, well, yep, electronic voting makes cheating easy. But you can't say that about the United States. You know, if you say, oh, well, these voting machines make it easy to cheat, electronic voting makes it easier to cheat. Depends on what two words you add after that. If you say, in Russia, approved. Yep, you can have that. That can go out online. No problem. If you say, in the United States, banned. That's got to be taken down. That was fine if you said that 2-3 years ago. If you made documentaries about it 2-3 years ago, and you even Democrats were doing that 2-3 years ago. Now, nope. That's got to be taken down. Well, a lot of news is frustrating these days, and there are plenty more things, especially on the subject of COVID or electoral stealing, that I could go on for a long, long time. And, you know, there's the story at the border. I mean, I don't want to get into that because it's changing so quickly. And again, this is pre-recorded, and I'm sure Mr. Stephen Fleury will have gotten into more of that on Monday's show, quite possibly, or certainly he did on Friday, where you got all these drone footage of people just streaming across the southern border. And what does the FAA do? So come in and say, well, no drones. We don't want you to, they're basically stepping in. They're meant to be the impartial, just there to make sure air traffic control flows freely, but they're still getting in there on the Obama administration, what it really is, you know, helping them cover up. But I found that anyway, lots of frustrating news. I found this one, next one, rather funny, actually. I don't know, not hilariously funny, but I thought it was pretty amusing, where we have a new alliance, the AUKUS alliance, or AUKUS alliance. That stands for, the A, Australia, UK for UK, US for US, AUKUS alliance, an amusing term. But it's an alliance that's going to focus on combating China, especially at sea. And as part of this, the US and the UK, to a certain extent, they're helping Australia join the elite nuclear club. They're going to get nuclear submarines. And anyway, I found this kind of funny because I saw this on Thursday and I kind of thought, oh, well, this is kind of neat. I didn't really think too much of it. And then it's absolutely blown up. It's absolutely exploded, this story. And it stands up to China. It's got China incredibly annoyed, and it has really annoyed France. And, well, annoying France is pretty much a national hobby of the UK. So that's why I found it amusing. France is really throwing all the toys out of the pram about this deal. But it could mark a major geopolitical shift and have some huge ramifications, this AUKUS deal. Certainly much, much more than I initially thought when I saw this deal rolled out on Thursday. I think there's something much more, much, much, much bigger potentially going on with this deal. So September 16th, this deal was announced, and it's about these three countries. They're working much more closely together, especially in the Pacific, and it has the potential just to completely upend the naval balance here. So you've got, I think there's only 7 nations right now that operate nuclear submarines. So it's a pretty big deal for Australia to kind of join the nuclear submarine club and to have access to these vessels. It could also see a US nuclear submarine stationed at Perth. That's something that's been talked about in the news media. I think some of these details we'll still have to kind of see if they're official and when they come out and some of those things. But having these nuclear submarines make a big deal to America's naval, or Australia's naval capacity. So at the moment, their diesel submarines, if they're going to the South China Sea, according to some good estimates, they could remain on station for about 11 days by the time they've sailed there. And then they've got to sail back and they've got to refuel. You know, a nuclear submarine, when it comes to fuel, it can pretty much stay at sea indefinitely. Now, you've also got the squishy human beings on board a nuclear submarine, and they need food and water and these other things. So it still will have to resupply. But again, some think tank, they were looking at America's nuclear submarines, and they drew the conclusion that they could probably stay on station in the South China Sea for 77 days. So in terms of looking at what China is doing and keeping an eye on China, this is a big deal for Australia. It makes it much, much easier. Much, much easier for them to do that. And then you could also see more American Marines deployed in Darwin. You've already got some there, but even more. There's the potential for longer range American missiles to be deployed in Australia, for Australia to gain the capacity to have more long range missiles. And so, well, I think you can see why China is furious. The state-run Global Times just fumed at the deal. They said this would make Australia a potential target for a nuclear strike. You know, they're not mincing their words. They're saying, well, potentially we might not have to... Well, I mean, they're not saying we'll nuke you over this deal, but you're going on our nuclear target list if you do this. We could be sending nuclear bombs at your cities. They also wrote, deploying nuclear submarines will force China to change its attitude towards Australia. And China will also be forced to make changes in its military deployment and countermeasures following Australia's latest move. But almost as big, perhaps even more significant, is the tantrum being thrown by France. Because, you know, the thing is, and we've got more sirens, the thing is that France had, they'd agreed to spend up to $90 billion I've seen two different numbers, $40 billion and $90 billion in the media. I think it depends on whether you look at the final value or initial value of this deal. But let's go with the big number, $90 billion they've been looking at spending on French diesel submarines. And because they're looking now at getting nuclear submarines, well, then they're saying, well, no thanks to the... They're pulling out of this deal with France. And that has major implications for France's naval industry. You know, this was a huge deal, a huge injection of cash to France's shipyards. This was going to help them keep their submarine manufacturing business, which then, of course, that's essential for the French Navy. It was going to be really important for keeping them going in the long term. Bruno Terrates from the Fondation pour la Recherche Stratégique, I guess it's pronounced, he said that it was a knife blow to the heart, that one that no one in France saw coming, a Trafalgar shot from which the naval group will take years to recover. So this is like the Battle of Trafalgar. This is like the end of French naval power, even. That's how significant it is for this kind of France's air naval region around the Cherbourg naval base. Oust France said it would be a small social and economic earthquake. There was another, I didn't write this down actually, but there was another news outlet talking about it being just like a slap in the face to France after Emmanuel Macron just a few months ago was literally slapped in the face. And now this is a very public global slap in the face to France. And here's a clip from the French ambassador to Australia talking about this deal.
I think this has been a huge mistake, a very, very bad handling of a partnership, because it was not a contract, it was a partnership. A trust partnership that's supposed to be based on trust, mutual understanding, and also a partnership based, you know, on sincerity.
So as you can see, they're very annoyed. The French foreign minister, he said it was really a stab in the back. We built a relationship of trust with Australia, and this trust was betrayed. This is not done between allies. And France has been so angry that the French government has withdrawn its ambassadors from the US and from Australia. This is the first time in history that France has recalled its ambassador from the United States. They are more angry with America than at any time in their history, apparently. They're really trying to send out signals that they're upset. And just as an aside, they didn't recall their ambassador from the UK, but they put out a statement basically saying, yeah, well, we know the UK is terrible, and this is exactly the kind of perfidious behavior that we would expect from the UK. We're familiar with the UK's permanent opportunism. And so because we're used to the UK acting like this, we're not going to recall our British ambassador. So that made me laugh. They had to get in some kind of petty statement in there, even though they weren't going to recall the ambassador. But much of the UK the whole of the EU, they've similarly taken offense to this kind of a deal. Deutsche Welle, they said that they characterized it as a declaration of war on the European Union. Germany's ambassador to the UK said the deal threatens the unity of the West. Now, there are people talking about this threatening NATO. Again, undermining NATO. I mean, NATO has been undermined a whole lot recently. But that's what they're talking about it doing. But I thought one of the most interesting takes on what was happening here came from John Allen Jr., who's a veteran Vatican watcher, runs the Crux, a Vatican focused website. And he had a fascinating article that ties in incredibly with Bible prophecy and really helps put in perspective as well just how important this deal is and could be. He wrote that this deal seems to have the potential to fundamentally redefine the geopolitical game. Since the close of World War II, he wrote, it was always the West, meaning North America, Europe, and Australia together against someone else, whether the Soviets during the Cold War or global jihadism after 9/11. Now it seems it may be the Anglo-Saxon powers versus China, with Europe either relegated to the sidelines or finding a new role for itself. It's no longer America, Britain, and Europe against China or against Russia or whoever. It's America and Britain and Australia against China. And the EU is going to sit somewhere different on that balance of power. In that realignment, the Vatican is likely to be an advocate for a more assertive and independent Europe. So the Vatican's going to play a role in this shift, he said. He talks about how the Vatican was never really all that keen on NATO. They were never really a big fan of that alliance. And that the basic skepticism about Anglo-Saxon culture remains hardwired into the Vatican's DNA. They're still concerned about this. And he talks about how that's especially the case under the current Pope, under Pope Francis. Very skeptical of anything Anglo-Saxon culture, very skeptical of the United States, hostile, I think, would be a much better word. So, they're not at all on board with America having, he's done a lot to try and push back at this idea that America should have a role all around the world and is undermining America's push for capitalism, etc. As he said, the Vatican has been pushing, this is John Allen Jr., the Vatican has been pushing Europe to be less deferential to the U.S. for some time. And then he talks about this deal and says that such a jolt could provide Europe with the impetus it needs to come together. Any such new European alliance likely would be premised on positioning itself as a bridge between China and the AUKUS powers. So this could be a jolt that Europe needs to unite, to come together. And then he says, well, the Vatican could play a huge role in this jolt, in Europe coming together. He talks about how this would require leadership. Well, where's that leadership going to come from? Germany's got an election in a week's time. They're not going to be providing that leadership right now. Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, she is not going to be providing that leadership right now. Now, it talks about how it could be provided by Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, working in close concert with the Vatican. That's what John Allen talks about, said, with Draghi supplying the strategic vision and Francis the moral leadership to position Europe as a legitimate third way between the poles of the new Cold War. And he concludes by writing, whatever may be said publicly, it is improbable that the Vatican will simply sit out the game of musical chairs now underway. We've got a game of musical chairs going on. The global order, the way things work around the world, that is changing right now. And the Vatican isn't going to sit that out. They're going to be playing a role in how all of this changes and works out. And like I said, this article is fascinating because it ties in so well with Bible prophecy. There's so many aspects that fit into this and this whole AUKUS story that is exactly what we've been looking at from a prophetic perspective. America believes it has these unshakable friends in Europe. It believes in the West, Joe Biden, even while undermining the West, even while pulling America out of Afghanistan and having Europe absolutely freak out about it and talk about how unfriendly it is, even while all of that, Joe Biden still believes in the West. So many in America, they still believe that Europe is on their side and that's just going to stay that way no matter what. While Bible prophecy warns that Britain and America will trust in lovers, in foreign allies, and that those lovers will destroy them. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 14, for example, it says, all your lovers have forgotten you. They seek you not. That's where this is leading. Europe is going to betray, or it's going to turn against Britain and America. Well, you can see that happening over the AUKUS deal. You can see that in France right now, recalling their ambassador, saying, well, relations between us there at the lowest ever. Well, and then other prophecies, well, they talk about this European power forming a temporary alliance with China. Isaiah 23, for example, it discusses Tyre and Sidon, the economic juggernauts of the ancient world, and they're a type of this massive economic power soon to arise in Europe. And they're described in a trading alliance with China, or with Kittim, as it talks about in Isaiah chapter 23, which is China in Bible prophecy. So they form a temporary alliance, an alliance of convenience with China, working together with them. And well, what do you see? You see Europe moving away from the United States. And you see this veteran commentator say, well, they could play a different role in this dynamic. It's not going to be like the Cold War, where you have America and Europe on one side and the communist power on the other. Europe's playing a different role. And that's exactly what's described in Bible prophecy, a temporary alliance with China, but just a temporary one, not this really solid, tight relationship that endures. Europe's a third power in the game, exactly as John Allen talked about. Then Revelation chapter 18, it describes the same European economic superpower. And the chapter before tells us that this economic superpower, it's controlled, it's dominated by a harlot, it talks about in there, or the great whore, a great false church. And, well, yeah, that's a woman is a church in biblical symbolism. So this new AUKUS deal, well, it provides an opportunity now for a major world religion to fundamentally shift Europe's role in the world. That's exactly what the Bible says. That's exactly what Herbert W. Armstrong has been talking about for years. I don't think I have time to go through all of the quotes, but you can go all the way back to the 1940s. You know, as soon as World War II is over, and he's talking about, well, you're going to see a type of a European Union, and you know who's going to play a major role in bringing them all together? The Catholic Church. They're not going to be able to do it without the Catholic Church. They're going to provide the moral leadership to bring them together. And what did we just read from a major news website? That the Vatican could be supply, or that Pope Francis could supply the moral leadership, and that such a jolt could provide Europe with the impetus it needs to come together. Exactly what Herbert W. Armstrong was saying for decades. And this is just, this is just the briefest overview of all of the prophecies involved. And they require a more detailed study to really prove to yourself, but I would encourage you to do that if you're not familiar with this. I just wanted to kind of give you this overview of how this AUKUS alliance and other events in world news are just really pushing us towards this whole prophetic picture, the prophetic panorama talked about in the Bible. We're seeing that come into focus, and you can see the broad sweep of prophecy, and it's all of these different details are all coming about right now. Not just one or two. You've got Europe led by the Vatican turning against America, siding with China, and perhaps AUKUS could help prompt this kind of shift. And maybe this will be a crisis that does help bring Europe together with the leadership of the Vatican. Even if not, while the resentment is still building against the United States in Europe, that resentment is bubbling in Europe. The Vatican, well, they're still looking to play a role in shifting Europe's alliance away from the United States. And if AUKUS doesn't provide the opportunity for that, that's a role they're still going to be looking to play. And they will still have opportunities to play that. World events could move very quickly, and you could have this prophetic picture a reality in front of you on your news very, very soon. And the picture the Bible paints of the immediate future that this realignment brings about is dark. But if you have that prophetic panorama, it's clear that today's events, they're part of a much bigger plan, a much bigger pattern, one that God is crafting out for the benefit of all of mankind. So you need to understand this whole panorama, this whole picture of Bible prophecy. And then as you see some of these dark events happen on world news, you'll see the whole picture. And that whole picture is just full of hope. And so those world events will just fill you with hope too. So if you would like to know more about this prophetic panorama, a great place to start is our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. That gives you a great introduction to Bible prophecy. It gives you the vital master key necessary to unlock all Bible prophecy. You can get that at our website, thetrumpet.com. You can also give us a call. We have our free phone number, 1-866-930-3024. We would be more than happy to send you a free copy of that. And we, you know, we ship just a whole range of different locations, different countries. We send it out for free. There's no cost involved. Like I said, you can read it online as well at our website, thetrumpet.com. And that's the United States and Britain in Prophecy. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll talk about, well, you know, why are we on this different schedule? Why are we pre-recording programs? Why all the guest hosts? What's going on? What are these holy days that we're keeping that we are interrupting our regular schedule for? We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man, and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show here at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com, 101.3 in the Edmond, Oklahoma region, or Channel 3 on the CRN Digital Talk Radio Network. No matter how you listen, how you watch, we're very happy to have you with us. And as we mentioned earlier, we've got a different set, different location, a bit of a different schedule with presenters and guest hosts and all that kind of thing all week this week. And today in this bit of a Bible study portion, I wanted to help explain why. What's going on? Why is our schedule all kind of jumbled up? And the reason for that is the Feast of Tabernacles. We're all celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles. And I want to review exactly what that is, if you've never heard of that, why the hosts of this program are keeping these holy days. If you're already familiar with them, well, we'll be helping to review and to prove why we keep these days. And it is, you know, even if you already keep them, it is very reassuring just to see how directly everything that we do just comes right out of the Bible. But the first place that we'll go just to look at and introduce these holy days that we're keeping is Leviticus chapter 23. And in this chapter, God lays out his holy day calendar. It's not a holy day calendar that the Christian world is particularly familiar with. Various different churches and groups have come up with their own calendar that they keep, and their own different holy days that are different to the ones that God records in the Bible. But we can just look at Leviticus chapter 23 and see these holy days coming right after the Bible, right out of the Bible. So Leviticus 23 and verse 34, it says, "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto the Eternal." And then you can see in verse 40, it says, "And you shall take you on the..." Well, it talks about some of how we keep these days. And then towards the end of that passage, "And you shall rejoice before the Eternal your God 7 days, and you shall keep it a feast unto the Eternal 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month." So here's a command to keep some holy days called the days of the Feast of Tabernacles. And God told the children of Israel, You should be keeping this day forever. There's no expiry date. There's no Messiah that's going to come along and stop these holy days. They're to be kept forever. And the New Testament confirms this. The New Testament proves this understanding of these holy days. We can see that over in Acts chapter 18, where it talks about some of these days. To rearrange things a little here, smaller desk than usual. Acts chapter 18 and verse 21. So it's talking about Paul traveling around. And, well, verse 20 talks about how the Jews wanted him to stay, or those in Ephesus, you know, they wanted him to stay longer. But verse 21, and he bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that comes in Jerusalem. But I will return again unto you, if God will. And he sailed on to Ephesus. So this is talking about Paul keeping these same holy days, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. So he's, and you can follow the whole chronology. In fact, you can look at all of Paul's journeys, and references to these holy days that are in Leviticus chapter 23 keep popping up. Oh, I was going to do some, I need to get something done before the fast. And that's the fast that's talked about in Leviticus chapter 23. So as Paul was traveling all around the Mediterranean, he was building his schedule in a lot of ways around these holy days. I want to be here for these holy days. I want to get back to Jerusalem ahead of these holy days. So we have something here that's pretty clear cut. You know, we have the command in Leviticus chapter 23, keep these holy days forever. We have the example of Paul, long after Jesus Christ died, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles and these other holy days. The only question is, well, will we? Will we obey what's in the Bible? We won't turn there, but Psalm 111 and verse 10 says, a good understanding of they that keep the commandments. You know, if we obey God, well, then we're going to understand. If we want to understand why do we keep these holy days, we have to obey. And then we'll learn, and then we'll have that good understanding. But the good understanding only comes if we're keeping, if we are obeying God. And these holy days are vital keys to understanding all of God's plan. So God has this Feast of Tabernacles teach us some powerful, vital lessons. And just helps us understand what God is doing in the world. It helps answer some of these big questions. You know, if God is more powerful than Satan, how come most of the world is not Christian? How come most people who have ever lived would have not been Christian? A huge chunk of them never even heard of Jesus Christ. Are they lost? Is it over for them? You know, those kind of questions that some of these eminent theologians and great scholars have debated and argued about for centuries. You know, if they would have just kept God's holy days, they teach them the answer to exactly those kind of questions. Exodus chapter 34 talks about this Feast of Tabernacles as well, and it gives it a slightly different name. Exodus chapter 34 and verse 22 says, and you shall observe the Feast of Weeks, that's talking about the Feast of Pentecost, of the first fruit of the wheat harvest, and the Feast of Ingathering at the year's end. So this is towards the end of the holy day season, the sixth of God's seven holy days. And it says here that, well, you'll keep the Feast of Ingathering, that it's called. So, well, it's not just a celebration of a harvest. The Feast of Tabernacles is not kind of some mere harvest festival or some Thanksgiving where, okay, we've gotten the crop in and we give thanks for that. I mean, certainly gratitude and appreciating the blessings that God gives us, that is a huge part of the Feast of Tabernacles. But this relationship with ingathering is something that goes much, much deeper. We'll have a look over at Zechariah chapter 14. And we'll look at one scripture of something that is pretty common in a lot of the prophets in the Bible. They all have these sections that paint these beautiful pictures of a time to come. So Zechariah chapter 14 verse 19 says, and the Eternal shall be king over all the earth in that day, Shall there be one eternal and his name one? Verse 11, and men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. And so it talks about, okay, well, Jerusalem's going to be safely inhabited. Other passages here talk about rivers of living water flowing out all over the earth in this passage. And so many of the Old Testament prophets, they have some prophecies about some imminent bad news, a terrible time of suffering. And you can go to all of these different prophets and they're all describing the same thing, this time of suffering that is soon coming on the earth. But at the same time, then they all have these beautiful sections talking about just this utopia, just this wonderful time where there'll be no more utter destruction. That'll be gone. Jerusalem will be safely inhabited. There'll be a peace and safety that, I mean, especially Jerusalem, but this world just hasn't known. And you can look at these prophecies in the Old Testament, and like I said, you just go through prophet after prophet, and Isaiah has beautiful descriptions, Micah, I don't think you could find any of these prophets that doesn't have some kind of description of this time. I haven't thought through every single one. But, okay, you read those, and you think, well, when has that happened? When has even Israel in the Middle East, have they ever had these times where you just have this utopia where everybody is obeying God and there are these blessings poured out? I mean, certainly there were times when Israel was blessed more than other times, but we haven't had any of these prophecies fulfilled yet. We haven't seen a world this wonderful in history. And this is the time that the Feast of Tabernacles points us to, keeps us in remembrance of, this time of wonderful peace that is coming. Right now, this world is cut off. Satan is the god of this world, as Revelation 12 and verse 9 says. This world as a whole doesn't have access to God, doesn't understand God's truth. And the Day of Atonement, this festival that precedes the Feast of Tabernacles, that's one of the many things that holy day reminds us of. But then the Feast of Tabernacles points us to a soon coming time of ingathering, when the whole world will be harvested, the whole world will be invited into God's family. And this is what the Feast of Tabernacles keeps us constantly reminded of, constantly looking forward to. That today is not the only day of salvation, that God is working out a plan that will see everybody have the opportunity to be born into God's family, to be invited into God's family. And, you know, sure, the Bible doesn't teach universal salvation. Some will have, a tiny minority will have the opportunity and not take advantage of it, and not want to obey God, not want to submit. But thus far, most of mankind hasn't even had the opportunity to obey God. They haven't known how. God is going to invite the whole world in, and then you have all of these beautiful prophecies that describe a world obeying God, a world very different from this world. And the Feast of Tabernacles tells us, well, that's when it's going to happen. It's coming soon in the future. And there are so many lessons that we can unpick from this day. I mean, I am just scratching the barest of the surface here. And it is just the first day of unleavened bread. And God gives us 7 days to unpack these lessons. And I'm sure the hosts that come after me on this show during these Feast of Tabernacles will probably talk about some of these lessons, some of these specifics. And there are a whole range of other specifics. You know, God has us live in temporary dwellings for these holy days. And there are incredible, profound lessons to learn from that, for example. So this is just the briefest introduction. But these are days that we need. You know, we talked in the earlier part of this show of seeing world events in the prophetic panorama. And in our free booklet, Daniel Unlocks Revelation, Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry, he writes, the minister's job is to fill the prophetic panorama with God. And for all of us, we need to fill the prophetic panorama with God in our lives. And these holy days are critical for helping us do that. They help us put the events of today in context with the whole prophetic panorama. Because if we just get really focused on the events of today, or maybe even the prophecies that are in many of these prophets that talk about the dark times just to come, and if that's all we see and we don't see the full panorama, and actually what we're seeing is just this relatively narrow slice, well, then we can get depressed, then we can get miserable, then we can lose hope. But these holy days really work with us, to help God works with us through this holiday calendar to stretch our minds beyond the immediate few years to the millennium, to this time where God will be gathering in the whole world, and this time of wonderful peace, and then even far beyond that. You know, the whole prophetic panorama is just really mind-stretching, which is why God has us have these holy days year after year after year, so we get this panorama more and more deeply, so we see a broader range of the panorama, so we see more depth and detail in this prophetic panorama. You know, we have some of these prophecies of say, immediate bad news, but like I said, all of these prophets are full of this time of wonderful peace and hope, and the Feast of Tabernacles shows us when that is going to happen. And I just have a final scripture to read here, and this is in Zechariah 14 and verse 16. And it says, "It shall come to pass that everyone that is left out of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up even from year to worship the King, the Eternal of Hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So there's a time where the whole world is going to Jerusalem to worship God. This is a time after Jesus Christ has returned and the entire world is worshiping him. They're not cut off from him anymore. And notice what they're doing? They're keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. God will have all nations keep the Feast of Tabernacles in the future. You're always to be reminded of this prophetic panorama. Even in the millennium, they're going to need to be reminded of the full picture. They're going to have to look back at the dark times that came before them at that point. They're going to have to look back and understand the lessons from those days. If you ignore God, if you go your own way, that is the result. This terrible destruction. And well, now we have this time of peace. And here's what's coming next. The holy days remind us of that. And here's the purpose for this time. You know, they're going to need these holy days too to keep them constantly in reminder of this prophetic panorama. So God's going to have, you know, God had ancient Israel keep these days. The disciples kept these days. The whole world will be keeping these days in just a short amount of time. The Bible makes it very clear that this is something God wants true Christians to be doing and to be keeping. And they just bring a magnificent vision into our lives if we do. And as I said, I'm just scratching the surface of this topic. If you would like to know more, if you've not heard about this before, you need to know more about these holy days. And we have just a very short booklet on that that will help introduce you to these days, help you start to understand the plan here. And it's a great starting point for understanding these holy days. It's called Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which it's just a short little booklet by Herbert W. Armstrong. And you can get that at our website, thetrumpet.com. We'd be very happy to send that out to you. If you want to read it right now, you can do that. You can read it online at our website. You can also phone up. I believe we've still got operators covering our phone lines during the Feast of Tabernacles. At the very least, you should get through to a voicemail, but I'm pretty sure we do have a skeleton crew manning the phones there. That's 1-866-930-3024. And they'd be very happy to send you a free copy of that. We ship our material all around to a whole host of different countries all around the world, and it's all free. You know, the shipping's free. There's no hidden catches or hidden costs or follow-up or anything like that. We love this truth. We love these holy days. We'll see the value that they've had in our lives, and we want to share them with the largest audience possible. And there are thousands of people behind us donating so that we can send those material, because they love this material. They want to send it out. So we'll be very happy to send you that. That is about all that I have time for. Oh, I'll just mention as well, though, if you did want more resources on keeping these holy days, I'll also mention our sister website, pcg.church. You know, we have this show tends to go out on thetrumpet.com. pcg.church tends to have some more religiously specific instruction. And every year we put up some articles there that have some just very practical information on how to keep these holy days and what you can learn from them. So that's another great place to go to learn about them. Well, that is about all that we've got time for. Please do keep tuning in as we have this unusual succession of guests, hosts. And I know people have been preparing material to bring to you throughout this Feast of Tabernacles. So we will be back tomorrow here on 101.3 on the FM dial. TD, or you can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com, if you have any questions. And of course, we're always available at our website, thetrumpet.com.